we'll get a United Way update.
Excellent.
Don't forget, we of course got Supreme Court, Wisconsin Supreme Court coverage going on today.
Mm-hmm. Yes, that'll be at 6 o'clock tonight on many of our civic media stations.
Yeah, be on the lookout for that. Listen in for that, everybody, and cheer on your Badgers tonight at 7 right here at WFHR when they continue on in the NIT tournament, going up against the Oregon Ducks. I can't see. I can't do it. I can't do it. Carl's the only one. He's the only one. Well, thank you, Mel. Great show. We'll talk to you later.
Yeah, and thanks for sharing that cut of Carl doing that. That was great.
We'll have more fun tomorrow, you guys. Stick around for more great stuff right here at 97.5 FM, 1320 AM, WFHR, locally grown radio.
This is CBS News on the Hour, presented by Paul Gauguin Cruises.
I'm Deborah Rodriguez. Treasury Secretary Janet Yellen is about to address the American Bankers Association in a bid to calm jitters after several small bank failures. CBS's Richard Escobedo is in Washington.
Fears about the stability of mid-sized U.S. banks have spread across the global financial system this past week and a half, and Yellen's comments come as San Francisco-based First Republic Bank continues to struggle and convince investors it's a viable bank.
The Fed is beginning 2 days of meetings on another interest rate hike. Vladimir Putin is hosting China's Xi Jinping at a state dinner in Moscow following a second day of talks on new support for Russia's war in Ukraine. Here in the U.S., the Pentagon is speeding up tank deliveries. Correspondent Cammy McCormick.
The newer Abrams tanks could have taken more than a year to build and deliver to Ukraine. Now officials say an older, refurbished version will be taken from Army stocks, and they will be easier for the Ukrainians to use and maintain. They could arrive within 8 to 10 months.
Law enforcement on alert nationwide after former President Trump called for his supporters to protest today. But CBS News has learned he may not be indicted in connection with alleged hush money paid to Stormy Daniels until later this week. His supporters have been protesting outside barricades surrounding Manhattan Criminal Court and the district attorney's office.
We're here to claim our streets back. We need a DA who's going to focus on doing the job and not weaponizing his office.
Fencing's also been installed around the U.S. Capitol in Washington. Over 1,000 schools in Los Angeles are closed today because of a massive job action by bus drivers, cafeteria aides, and other union members. Correspondent Steve Futterman is there.
After this announcement last night,
we've run out of time.
The strike officially began this morning. This school bus driver on the picket line.
I've been working 30 years and I've been no contract for 3 years, and it's time for a change, and we're going to do it today.
Teachers are not technically on strike, but they are supporting the workers refusing to cross the picket line.
100%. They're the people who clean our schools, that feed our kids, that keep our campuses safe.
More than 400,000 students are affected. Nearly 200 locations have been set up where they can receive limited supervision.
A 72-year-old retiree from Florida, Saeed Ibrahim Al-Badi, has been freed after spending more than a year in jail in Saudi Arabia. CBS's Vicky Barker is at the foreign desk.
He was sentenced to 16 years, later raised to 19 years for tweets criticizing the government. He's now back with his relatives in Riyadh, but it appears he remains banned from leaving the kingdom.
This is CBS News.
CBS News is brought to you by Paul Gauguin Cruises, artfully authentic, all-inclusive year-round cruising to Tahiti and the South Pacific. Visit pgcruises.com today.
I can't believe tax season is here already. But look at all this info I have to enter.
Phil's small accounting firm is growing in numbers.
Why didn't I take that typing class in high school?
A data entry specialist could really help him in a crunch.
I got blisters on my fingers.
Indeed can help him hire great people fast.
I need Indeed.
Indeed you do. You can schedule and conduct virtual interviews all from your employer dashboard. Visit Indeed.com/credit and get $75 towards your first sponsored job. Terms and conditions apply.
Breaking news.
Tax refund shock is everywhere, but what is it?
My tax refund shrank.
Mine too.
The culprit? Pandemic-related stimulus payments and tax credits expiring. In this reporter's opinion, you need a tax expert.
Hey guys, Jackson Hewitt guarantees your biggest refund.
And tax prep is 50% off? Going there now.
50% off is a limited time offer for new clients filing at participating locations. Max value $200. Visit jacksonhewitt.com/50 for terms.
It's the only forum both Wisconsin Supreme Court candidates will take part in, and you can hear it Tuesday, March 21st at 6 p.m. on your local Civic Media radio station.
News director Terry Bell will anchor our special coverage as Janet Protasiewicz and Dan Kelly debate some of the biggest issues facing the court, from redistricting to abortion access.
The Wisconsin Supreme Court candidates debate Tuesday, March 21st, here on your local Civic Media radio station, streaming everywhere on the Civic Media app.
Here's your forecast from locally grown radio, WFHR. Chance for scattered snow showers this afternoon, otherwise cloudy skies. High of 40, east winds 8 to 15 miles per hour. Scattered rain showers likely tonight, lows level off around 32, cloudy. Scattered rain showers likely tomorrow, high of 49. A dusting of snow today with another inch tomorrow night through Thursday. For Civic Media, I'm meteorologist Jennifer Wojcicki. Currently, it's 26.
Good morning. You're listening to Central Wisconsin's 24-hour information station, WFHR. It's time now for the Morning Magazine.
Welcome, everyone, to Morning Magazine for this March 21st, 2023, 10:05 on the clock, and you have your host, James J. Mailoff, here. At 10:30, we're going to speak with CEO of your United Way of Southwood and Adams Counties, Terry Johns. We'll have Terry in studio. Right now, in studio with us, some of our favorite people. We've got our friends from Historic Point Boss here. Good morning, you guys.
Good morning.
Good morning, James, and everybody in WFHR land.
Thank you so much for being here. Appreciate the time, and any chance we can talk about Historic Point Boss. Always like being able to do that, and today we're going to put our focus on the Wakely Sugar Bush. This is coming up Saturday, March 25th, this Saturday, from 10 to 4. It's going to be a really fun event, as it is every year. And you guys know by now, I love talking maple syrup. Like, any chance to talk maple syrup, I'll take it. Let's dive into this event, Mike, and let's first touch on it as if people haven't heard of it before. Let's explain to them what it is.
Well, a lot of people probably aren't familiar or just faintly familiar with the harvesting of maple sap, which is cooked down into maple syrup. And we do it, if we have enough people, we'll do it the traditional way, and Tom can cover that. Tom, why don't you cover? Mm-hmm. Basically, the cranberry industry and the maple syrup industry came from our Native American forefathers here, and they're the ones that started both those industries. Of course, us white people took it to the nth degree, of course, but why don't you tell Tom a little bit how the Native Americans discovered it and maybe how they did it in those days?
Well, there's the maple trees, if you break a branch or there's a damage to the tree, will leak maple sap this time of year. Huh. And as a kid, I remember several large trees that were kind of hurting, and they would literally run down the side of the tree. So the Native Americans collected this stuff and used it, I think, in cooking to start with, and in doing that, realized that it gets a lot sweeter the longer you cook it. Now, there's a bunch of different theories about it, because they didn't write stuff down. This is an oral tradition, and there's some gaps. But pretty much one of the ways that they would have done it, and it was to use hot rocks to boil the sap to reduce it. We do an experiment with our cooking class where we take a trough of wood, a wooden trough, 12 inches deep, 12 inches wide, 4 feet long, put in 3 or 4 baseball to softball size rocks in there, and raise it from ambient around 72 or whatever degrees to well over 100 in 4 minutes. And the more you do it, the more you can boil water in a wooden container using hot rocks. Now, you can't do that all the way down to the bottom to get syrup. It'll stick to there. You can't do it. It doesn't work. But then they took and would put it in a trough and set it on a hot rock, and actually heat the wood enough that it would still keep evaporating to get it down closer to syrup. And at night, they wouldn't boil it all night. You would think, okay, keep it going all the time. You'd let it freeze, and the water and the thicker minerals and sugars separate, and they just skim that ice off the top each morning.
Whoa.
They're actually reducing it as they sleep, probably almost quicker than if you did it with the rocks.
Right, know? Right.
And then they put it in a trough on a rock and cook it down, and then the natives did it into maple sugar.
Hmm.
When you get it down to, well, I don't know, today they do it to like 240 degrees. I mean, they boil it down so it's thick syrup.
Yeah.
And then you stir it, and you're making crystals, just like they make white crystal sugar.
Yeah.
It's the same thing. And then they stored it that way. They wrapped it in birch bark cones or other containers and would keep forever. Syrup will spoil, get moldy, start to work a little bit, ferment. So they took it down to sugar because they would use it all year long.
Yeah. Huh. And it's kind of interesting, James, and we talked about it, I think, the last time we were here, maybe a couple of years ago, that the Native Americans in Michigan produced so much of this, thousands of pounds of this. And you can imagine the process, how
it took
so long to get thousands of pounds. And during the, and before the Civil War, with the abolitionists in New York and in the New England states, they provided them maple sugar because the people were kind of boycotting the South and the sugar that was coming out of the Southern states. And, of course, during the Civil War, it wasn't available because there was a war.
Yeah.
You might have been getting some from the Caribbean islands or something like that. But there was a big industry of it. And I read somewhere, I think, that they got like 4 cents a pound. So you can imagine.
Yeah. Wow. Just
unbelievable.
But there were tons and tons.
Yeah.
And the native people picked up on metal cooking containers very quickly.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, come on, you know.
Yeah.
These folks are survivalists from way back, and this made their life just much better. And so you can imagine that big cooking kettles made their way out to the frontier reasonably soon, and they would actually bury them at their sugar bush site.
Hmm.
So that next year you come and you have to lug it with you all the time. It's the only time you use it, so you'd bury it or hide it, and then in the spring you would go back and get it.
Certainly during that time when the Native Americans, especially in the state of Michigan, or not probably the state yet, but territory of Michigan, did it at that time, they were using metal kettles.
Oh, sure.
They weren't using stones and wood troughs and things like that. They were ready. They probably had that stuff since late 1700s that trading and that sort of thing.
I would say late 1600s.
Yeah, and we got a treat for you today, James, in dealing with Katrine and Stephen. We want to keep up the tradition.
Yeah. Oh, you got something for me to try?
Well, we always talk about maple sap, and then it's a 40-to-1 ratio to cook it down. You know that's average. Sometimes a little better, sometimes a little late. So I just harvested this yesterday from down at the Wakely site, and this is maple sap, and you'll be able to taste it.
Yeah.
And there isn't a lot of sweetness to it. It's just a hint of sweetness, but that's what you start with to get maple syrup out of it.
Oh, wow.
And you can imagine how much it's going to take of boiling this down to get a product that's really sweet.
Huh.
You can just taste it like there is maybe just a hint of sugar in there. And there is. I think most of these things have, I think, Tom, I saw if you had a good maple tree, it was maybe 5 or 6% sugar. The average is maybe 4%. So it isn't a lot in the sap.
No.
So
that's why that's that 40-to-1 ratio. But it's just a hint of it.
You're right. I immediately could taste a hint of the sugar a little bit, but it doesn't taste like sugary water.
No,
like it almost inseparable, the sugar and water. Like it's so intertwined.
In fact, some people now have got industrious with this or creative with it, and they're bottling this maple sap as an electrolyte because it would have some minerals in there plus a little bit of sugar, and they're bottling it for an electrolyte for athletes or whoever would want electrolyte replacement. And so, you know, that there's going along different ways. And, of course, we talk about maple trees being used for that, but they tapped a lot of different things, but maple has by far the most sugar. Now, you can tap birch and things like that. they'll only have a hint of sweetness to it, and sometimes a little bitter overtone or something to it. But
there's some folks at Rudolph that have been bottling for themselves Box Elder, which is a maple cousin, if you will.
Yeah.
It's kind of more of a scrubby tree, but I know I've tasted that, and it's good. I mean, it's a lot like maple because it's, like I say, a first cousin.
This is really cool. Thank you, Mike. Yeah. That's fascinating to me. Yeah. That's so cool. You guys know I'm a history nerd, and some of my favorite history is certainly American history, and that this era that we're talking about, kind of before things got incredibly tense and everything between, you know, those first colonizers and Native Americans, when they were kind of learning to work together. And those, you know, sharing things. Native Americans shared things with those coloners and so on and back and forth and everything. It's such a cool, like, to me, it's really what we were supposed to be doing, what this country was supposed to turn into and everything, a collaboration instead of, you know, what it kind of, the direction it went for a while there and everything. This brings you back to that a little bit. And I think that's really cool, along with, of course, bringing history to life, which is what you guys do at Historic Point Boss. Seth and I have this bit called Wasting a Time Machine, that if we could go back in time, I'd want to see, you know, they always talk about if you have a time machine going back and saving humanity and these things. And I'm a big believer in you change one thing and things could get worse. So I'm going to keep things as they are, but I would waste a time machine to go back and see Miles Davis at the Monterey Pop Festival or something like that. I'd love to go back in time and see that first person discovering that maple syrup, like you could use this for something, tasting like, guys, this is really good. We should do this something with this.
Yeah.
And to see that process of how they figure this out, the trial and error of, okay, this amount of degrees is too cold. We got to go hotter or what have you. Like, that just is such a cool thing to think of how that broke down.
You're maybe talking, James, about maybe hundreds, maybe thousands of years for this whole evolution of this industry to come to where it is today, certainly.
I just watched one on an evolution of corn in Mexico from a grass to what we have today. I mean, it's 10,000 years.
Yeah.
But it was the first genetic engineering, if you want to call it that. I mean, it isn't the kind where you...
Or maybe you know, more typically, maybe hybridization.
That's maybe it. But I mean, they're specializing in, ooh, this little corn thing is like we would think of the little baby corns that you get in the Chinese Asian foods. This all took thousands of years, and it's just fascinating.
When it comes to that, and you mentioned this a little bit, Tom, that the Native American recipes, there were holes missing in this and everything. So when it comes to filling those holes, how did that work out? How did that go? Was that something that you guys were in the process of? Others were? I mean, it seems like something that would take a lot of people to kind of, you know, a lot of different minds to jump in on that one.
I think it's still going on.
But, you know, it's kind of like reverse engineering anything else. And much of the herbs and spices that we think of today as flavorings started out as medicinal stuff. And they learned that they liked it. And kind of a preventive medicine. Well, okay, if cinnamon is good for this, then why don't I put some in my Cinnabons or whatever you got and help prevent whatever it is. And besides, it tastes really good. So sage and... sweet grass and, well, not sweet grass so much. That's more of a scent thing. But
I get what you mean.
You know what I mean. The different, there's a ton of herbal stuff out there and vegetables that are growing. Hazelnuts was one of the biggest things. They grow wild all over North America, the northern part of North America. Yeah. And they harvested them, just tons and tons of them.
We are speaking with Mike and Tom from the Historic Point Boss, talking about their weekly Sugar Bush event coming up this Saturday from 10 to 4 over at the Historic Point Boss. And one of the things you guys are going to have a part of this is Canadian dumplings. They're going to be the part of this as well.
It's a brand new thing that one of our members came up with. Yeah. And before, we used to do silver dollar pancakes with maple syrup, but this was kind of a different recipe. I think these dumplings are made, and then they're cooked in maple syrup. I think it's a combination of water and maple syrup, like 50-50 or something like that. And that'll be in the house, and you can get a little taste of those and a sample of those. Like we always say, we're not providing a meal, so it's a taste testing is what it is, actually. So it's nice that you announced that what we were talking about. James, if somebody had tuned in, they wouldn't know what we're talking about.
Yeah.
We diverged a little bit.
I love that we do, though, too. I love that we do that sometimes. I think that that's one of the things, really, what you got there was a bit of what you'll get at the Wakely Sugar Bush. You get these this chance of not just being told history, but learning history, yep. being able to kind of be immersed in it a little bit. And, right. and I think people learn and register or remember things better that way,
right.
as well.
And last year was the first year I decided to give people a taste of this. Of this maple syrup or maple sap, actually, mm-hmm. and so we'll do that again this year. Then I'll also take some out when we got it maybe one quarter, one third cooked down, and I'll give you a taste of that to show you what the difference is of that concentration as we get closer and closer to maple syrup. We never actually get to maple syrup there. It would take probably 10 or 12 hours, and we only got like a 9-hour or 8-hour day there, so we don't get. Some of our members take it home and they cook it down and finish it off, but we just don't have enough time in the day, or we'd have to start at 4 a.m. to get it ready. So
I'm not coming in.
Can you sleep in, Tom? Yeah, you don't have to worry about it.
When it comes to the event, we always like to make sure that people know that it's affordable. You guys go out of your way to make sure that it is, and we greatly appreciate that. Because for adults, it's $3. Students, it's $1. And that money goes into things over this Torrey Point Boss to keep not only the lights on, but to keep history alive, to keep these events continuing.
Yeah, we're with some of that money and some of the things we've done in the past, we're working on a shelter that will be up and running, I hope, by end of May or something, certainly for our festival in June. Speaking of the festival, it's a good segue for me to mm-hmm. give everybody a teaser, James. It's the 160th anniversary of the Gettysburg Address, and we got a Lincoln interpreter that'll be there and be reciting that, and we'll have some Civil War soldiers there. And I'm working with a group that's playing some music to play Hail to the Chief, because it was used the first time in 1837 for Andrew Jackson. So,
wow.
It's going to be a little different movement to it. And actually, it's kind of hard to get soldiers to the interpretive soldiers to be there, because mm-hmm. in 2 weeks after that is the actual date at Gettysburg, and everybody's heading to Gettysburg. Of course, all these reenactors go out there. They have a great group of people out there.
Yeah.
And so it'll be kind of fun for people and he'll review troops, whatever amount of troops we have there, and he'll do some other speaking and things like that. So he's from St. Clair, Minnesota, and so we're kind of happy to have Bryce Stenzel join us, and we wanted to make this kind of special because of the 160th anniversary. So
great idea. That is a great idea. That is going to be a lot of fun. That is going to be very cool. Something like that, too, for young people, I think it stays in their memory a little bit more. Those kind of something like that.
Mm. You know, it was always that. When we heard about when we read it in school, and mm-hmm. and maybe some of us tried to memorize it or something like that. Some of those teachers, kind of said, well, you should memorize this. It isn't very long and that sort of thing. But we heard about the great big speech that was given, it was like 2 hours long before that. Mm-hmm. His was so short, a lot of the people didn't know he was done or he had even done it yet. And this is the one that sticks with us, not the 2 hour speech.
It gets lost in the shuffle a little bit, but Lincoln was not only one of our greater presidents, but he was a great public speaker. Like, he was very smart with his words, right. And his speeches, and that one in particular, go down as some of the greatest of all time. And that one especially, top 10 greatest speeches of all time. Not just from the presentation and the meaning of it, but the way it was written. Lincoln had people that worked with him, but he was his nowadays.
He was his own speechwriter.
Yeah, he was his own. Like back, nowadays they've got people that a team of writers, right. and stuff back then. It's just Abe. That's pretty cool.
And I think that the whole gist of it is because of the very scarcity of words and the brevity of the whole thing, and he just told it all in very few words.
Very well said.
He didn't have to talk 2 hours.
Yeah, yeah.
Because the guy that was talking 2 hours is putting more people to death. They're going to bury in that cemetery.
Nicely done. Nicely done, sir. I did want to mention, whenever you guys join us, I like to bring up a couple of things. One of them that the Historic Point Boss has tours that we offer to students and different groups, something we always want to remind people of.
Yeah, we got about 8 set for spring so far.
Cool.
And they start usually in the first part of May or the last part of April, And we encourage all those out there listening that is a mother of a student or maybe a retired teacher that knows somebody in the school district. And we do about a 50-mile radius, actually, do from Wausau. We got school from there, and Stevens Point, of course, and Bancroft and Millador and all around us, Adams Friendship. But we also have that newer thing we talked about, I think, last time, James, is that if you're in the area and you want to get a tour, and it's not one of the days we have an event there, you can call ahead and arrange something for, you know, a family, four people, or a reunion or something like that, and we can arrange a tour for you on any specified day that we have personnel available. So that's a great boon, I think, and for people that, you know, we do about 8 or 9 events a year, and so, you know, it's kind of hit and miss if people come into the area from out of town, and if you got some people out there that maybe you got some friends or relatives coming in and you want to have something special, you know, call us ahead of time and arrange that, and we'd be happy to take you around.
I talked to some listeners, and last time you guys joined us about that, and they really loved hearing that that was an option. That there was a new family in town, and they were very curious. They're not from Wisconsin, so they were really curious about the history, and they weren't able to make the last event you guys were here with us for, the ice event, I believe. So this one they're probably going to be at, and that's pretty cool. But telling them that, hey, there's plenty of other opportunities to check out things at the Historic Point Boss, and also plenty of opportunities to volunteer over there. We want to keep things going, and as much as we love Mike and Tom, we cannot keep them working the next 30 years, people. We need volunteers.
25
need...
maybe, but not 30.
There you go, Tom. That's my guy. We want to keep you guys working, of course. We want to keep things alive over there. Volunteers, people, you know, young blood into the organization over there is helpful to do that.
Yes. You know, with their young families out there, and they go, well, geez, I got these kids. No. Pioneers that came to this area were not gray-haired old men and women. They were young people with lots of kids. We love kids. I mean, not just as visitors.
Yeah.
But on the site, I mean, that's what there was there. And if you're going to really portray the history, you got to have some little members, too.
Yeah.
That's a great point.
The Wakelys came on June 2nd, 1837, and they had two boys, and the third child, a girl, would be born that December. So,
yeah, yeah.
So we like to portray a little bit more what was there, so we'd like the involvement of young families, certainly.
You talk about gutsy women.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
She's 50 miles from the nearest settlement. And she comes in June and has a baby in December. Hold on, folks.
That's incredible. The stories, there's so many of them, too. And they're all there for you waiting to be heard over at the Historic Point Boss. You want to be a part of the Wakely Sugar Bush, it is this Saturday from 10 to 4. Learn about the historic making of maple syrup from experienced cookers. Maybe get some tips. You never know. People like a city boy like myself that hopes to be able to do this one day. I need to be going to every
one of
these.
There's a lot of people that do it just in their backyard.
Yeah,
tons of
them. So cool. Yeah. Again, this event is happening this Saturday. We encourage you to take in the event from 10 to 4. Preschoolers and members get in for free. Otherwise, adults, $3. Students, $1. And you can find out more by going to historicpointboss.com. That's historicpointboss.com. Mike, Tom, you know how much I love talking to you guys. Thanks so much for the time. Appreciate it. Looking forward to hanging out again real soon.
Yeah, thanks, James and WFHR.
We'll take a break. We'll come back. We'll talk a little more with our friends from the United Way coming up here on Morning Magazine at WFHR. Our locally grown radio.
It's the only forum both Wisconsin Supreme Court candidates will take part in, and you can hear it Tuesday, March 21st at 6 p.m. on your local Civic Media radio station.
News director Terry Bell will anchor our special coverage as Janet Protasiewicz and Dan Kelly debate some of the biggest issues facing the court, from redistricting to abortion access.
The Wisconsin Supreme Court candidates debate Tuesday, March 21st, here on your local Civic Media radio station, streaming everywhere on the Civic Media app.
WFHR. Chance for scattered snow showers this afternoon, otherwise cloudy skies. High of 40, east winds 8 to 15 miles per hour. Scattered rain showers likely tonight, lows level off around 32, cloudy. Scattered rain showers likely tomorrow, high of 49. A dusting of snow today with another inch tomorrow night through Thursday. For Civic Media, I'm meteorologist Jennifer Wojcicki. Currently, it's 26.
Good morning, and welcome back to The Morning Magazine. It's time for part two.
Welcome, everyone, to Morning Magazine for this March 21st, 2023, 10:30 on the clock. And you have your host, James, and I am joined by CEO of your United Way of Southwind and Adams Counties, Terry Johns.
Good morning.
Morning, Terry. How are you doing?
I'm doing well. How are you?
Doing okay. I'm trying to act professional. I'm trying to, because we have to be professional here. This is our professional
time. Is it difficult?
Time. It's a little tough. It's a little tough. I always appreciate being able to hang out with you and talk about things United Way centered. There's so much to talk about. Where would you like to start?
Well, I think we'll start with a little bit of a wrap up. So last week was our Power of the Purse event, and everything went fabulously, as we expected, and great venue, of course, at Bullseye Golf Club. But what's really important is that the event set a new record. A new fundraising record.
Nice.
So, so our event last Tuesday raised $9,585. So we almost hit $10,000. So that's really awesome, and that is all for early grade learning and literacy. So that's, you know, that's where the dollars get invested in the community. So very exciting. You know, hats off to our committee. Of course, we had a committee of Women United that helps to put on Power of the Purse. We have one member of our group who is extremely creative and, you know, the definition of hostess with the mostest, you know. So she comes up with all the centerpieces and the theme and all of that kind of thing. So I want to just call out Jeannie Kranz for all of her hard work. But, you know, everything came together so well, and it was a very well-enjoyed evening. And just, you know, nothing bad to say about it. It just went really well.
A shout out to the community, to everybody that participated in that. Certainly you and the staff and the good work that you guys did, and our friends at Bullseye hosting and everything.
Absolutely.
Fantastic. Great to hear. Boy, that is humbling. And I'm not even a part of these things, and hearing that is humbling to me. I can't imagine for you guys there seeing that final number, that total. And
it's
like,
so,
we got to double check this. Did we get this right?
It's so exciting. But you know me, I'm like, we were only $415 short. Like, I'm like trying to figure out where to come up with $415 to get it to $10,000. But you know, I guess it's a good goal for next year, right? Everything went really well, and we want to, you know, thank everyone who attended, came out, enjoyed the evening with friends, and just, you know, looking forward to next year.
When we say that money, we give the people that total. I know we've touched on this before, but just to kind of wrap up the conversation, that money is staying in the community, and it's going towards some really important causes.
Absolutely. So all early grade learning and literacy. So a couple of places that Women United invests their funds. The first and most important probably is our Dolly Parton Imagination Library program. This is a book gifting program for children from birth to age 5, and the child, the only guideline on it is that the child needs to reside here in Southwood County. So the child needs to live in the zip codes of Rudolph, Vesper, Port Edwards, Nakusa, or Wisconsin Rapids, and then they qualify to receive a free book in the mail every month up until the time they turn 5, where they get a really special graduation book from Dolly Parton with a nice message in it, you know, kind of an on to kindergarten message. But that's where, and the cost, just to give folks an idea, the cost to Women United for this program is about $32 per child per year. So that's, you know, we do give the opportunity on our website that people could sponsor a child if they would like to. We say $30 for the year. You know, it just sometimes depends what books get selected by Dolly's reading interventionist. But I would say the actual number is about $32 a year. So very extremely cost effective. This is an international program. So if I would really like to visit their distribution center someday. I would really love to see that, because, you know, if we have, let's just say we have 600 kids on the program. We don't have quite that many right now, but that's our average. So if we have 600 kids receiving books, but there are, let's say, if you think about a 3-year-old, 3 years, 3 month old, that same book is going out to like almost 1 million kids.
Yeah.
And then there's every other, you know, there's 60 months worth of kids. So it's quite remarkable. But I would like to, that'd be a good field trip sometime. I would love to go visit.
Field trip was exactly what popped in my head. I'm like, field trip. That's the first thing I thought of.
So that's the probably the most notable place that the funding goes. But we also have two other opportunities. One is our Reading Mentor Program. And this is for encouraging adults to be reading mentors in our elementary schools. And this program is run again by Women United. And it's basically you're giving, you know, 40 minutes of your time, an hour of your time each week, and committing to being, you know, part of that classroom and part of, you know, typically you're working with three or four kids each week that you come in, and building a relationship with them and being their kind of their reading buddy, right? So the idea is that in the classroom during the intervention time, you know, there's certainly children who need to work with the teacher one-on-one or the reading specialist. And then there's the kids on the other end who are, you know, can be very self-guided and do exactly what the teacher says and do their reading on their own. And then you got some kids in the middle, right, who need an adult to listen to them read, to help guide them. And so that's who we're working with. So there's no special like certification or any sort of education level that's needed. It's just a willingness to read with kids. And right now we have mentors in five elementary schools. So that's really important. And then the other thing that happens with Women United funds is classroom grants. Yeah. So teachers can write to Women United and ask for funding for a specific need in their classroom as it pertains to literacy. So we see a wide variety of grants and requests and different needs. And, you know, some are the need for wraparound books for the curriculum that they already have. You know, maybe they need more of the low-level readers to really make sure all kids are getting exactly what they need. And then sometimes we just see some really, really creative requests, you know, that are just, you know, something spectacular and different that they want to do with the kids. So that's where all of those funds get reinvested in our community. And it's exactly what you said. The dollars are raised here and they stay here and they impact our kids, you know, who are our future, right? They're our future leaders. So anything that we can do to ensure their success, I think is just remarkable.
So good to hear that the event went off well. Already looking forward to next year's and looking forward to more opportunities to help out literacy in this area.
Yeah. And actually, while we're talking about Women United, it doesn't necessarily fall chronologically in my calendar here, but we do have a membership recruiting event. And so, you know, sometimes people hear us talk about it. Maybe they attended Power of the Purse and they're thinking, oh, you know, maybe I'd like to be part of this group. We do have a Women United membership recruiting event, and that is going to take place on April 26th. So just kind of a save the date, putting that out there. It does require an RSVP because this is more of a presentation, you know, where we talk to you about Women United, members talk about it, mentors talk about it, teachers talk about it. And so there will be more information posted on our website coming up, but it is April 26th at 5:15. So just, you know, just something to be watching for, and I'm sure that you and I will be talking about, but anyone who might be interested in being a member of Women United, this is a great opportunity to come and learn.
Looking forward to reminding people about that later and stuff, but as we get closer to it, that's a great event, great idea for an event too. One other thing that I wanted to make sure we touched on before we go to our first break, or our only break, is the 2-in-1 dashboard. This was exciting. I got the newsletter the other day when this came out and everything. Tell people a little bit about this.
Yeah, so recently 2-in-1 Wisconsin released a social determinants of health dashboard. And what it's doing is using the last 5 years of 2-in-1 data. And it's very interesting, and you could spend lots of time on it, depending upon what your, you know, what your interest is. But this, again, was rolled out from 2-in-1 Wisconsin, but it trickles down to the local contact center. And we happen to be one of those. Our United Way's 2-in-1 serves 13 counties. And so when you visit this dashboard, and you can find it on our website, there is a banner when you first go onto the website, and you can click on it and go right to the dashboard. You can sort by almost any way that you could think about 2-in-1 data. So you can sort it by county. You could sort by contact center. So that would be like the 13 counties that we serve. So often if I use it, that's what I'm searching by to see, you know, what our service delivery looks like. You can sort by issue, topic, referral. So you could just, let's say you were interested in just Wood County and you wanted to know how many referrals were made as it pertains to food insecurity. You can find that out, and you can look at it for 1 year, 2 year, 3 year, 4 year, or 5 years. You can look at it collectively. You can look at it, you know, individually by year. But it's quite remarkable the amount of information that can be pulled here. And so who might use this? Of course, you know, the general public could use it just to be self-informed and to learn about what people are, you know, what needs that, mm-hmm. that folks have. Certainly organizations are using it for data. To gather, it might help them write a grant. It might help them just speaking to a certain topic within the community. You know, you might be, let's just say, I'll just use as an example, the Family Center is one of our partner programs. Mm-hmm. So, you know, maybe the Family Center goes on and they need some additional data around maybe it is something they're doing around food insecurity or, mm-hmm. you know, it could be anything. But this is every referral that is made through 211. And for folks who are listening that aren't familiar with 211, 211 is a 24-hour resource and referral line that you can call and for any need that you might have. So it could be an actual, you know, something that's critical or, you know, you might say, I need food, right? That's right. A critical human need. You could also call if you said, I have a bunch of professional clothing to donate. Where could I go with that? So need is used loosely because it's all spectrum of need. It's mm-hmm. it's that you need information for something. And so we really encourage people to call 211. It helps us up until this dashboard was put into place, we didn't necessarily have a good tracking mechanism. Mm-hmm. We could look within our own contact center, but to see it statewide is pretty awesome. So it helps us track needs and who's meeting needs in the community, yeah. but it also helps us track unmet needs. You know, right. So we can also click and say, you know, what did people call for that we just couldn't help them? Mm-hmm. We didn't have anything. And so again, that might be something that helps programs down the road too, and other agencies, other human service agencies to say, you know, hey, we're thinking about this. We're thinking about going down this road, but we're just not sure if there's a need. Well, one of the places that need could be established or determined is by looking at this dashboard. And again, it's got, you know, the last 5 years worth of data on it. So it's really good, but it's also fun to just kind of look at. You know what I mean? You can just,
that's what I was doing.
You can just hit the different radio buttons and, you know, check it out and see what you can learn about your community.
Yeah, I was doing that I was telling myself it was data for the interview here and research, but actually I was just having fun. Yeah. I was just enjoying doing it, and I love data, I love information. So I was just testing it and trying out some different questions that popped in my head, and it was great to be able to do. And then I started thinking about it, like some of the things you touched on there, the organic things that this will create, the different opportunities and different resources it'll give to other people that we don't even know yet because it's just been, it just got here. It also gives me a little perspective and a little respect to our 211 operators and all the great work they've done for so many years before we had this dashboard. So a big shout out to all of them and the great work that they did. But also the combining of information, how important that is in this day and age. It's interesting because I've talked about this a lot with Sheriff Becker and how important it is for sheriff departments and police departments to share information throughout the state. This is a little like that to me. This is a little like how we're able to share this information so much easier and freer, and it's a resource that I have a feeling we haven't even scratched the surface yet of the use of it.
Yeah, and it is pretty awesome. I mean, we've had all the data, and we've been able to dig it up, but to have it in this platform, in this dashboard platform, is very remarkable, and there's more to come. So, you know, so that's really cool, because we're going to start seeing some closed-loop casework represented as well. So we're looking forward to that.
Just a shout-out to 211. And the United Way. This is really cool, and you can find out more. I do encourage people to sign up for the newsletter. You would have already known about this. You didn't have to wait for Terry and I to talk about it. But I do encourage you to sign up for the newsletter and to, of course, check this out yourselves. It's a really cool resource. Terry and I will be back. We're going to take a minute break. We'll come back and have some more fun with our friends from the United Way here on Morning Magazine at WFHR.
The Rick Smith Show. Where working people come to talk.
When we got back from the Working Class Heroes radio tour, one of the things that people asked is, what'd you learn? As you're going through rural America, what'd you find? Found angry people, and angry for cause. But the sad reality is they've been fed decades of outrage candy, and they're angry at the wrong people. They're angry at their neighbors. They're not angry at the very wealthy where they should be. Be sure to tune in live weeknights, 8 to 10 p.m. across the Civic Media Radio Network, and have your voice heard.
Welcome back to Morning Magazine here at WFHR, locally grown radio. Do want to apologize. Our system has been having some hiccups today and really the last couple of days. I click on something, it won't play. We're trying to figure that out. But if you've heard some pauses in the action, that's what that is. I am not about to waste Terry's time, so we're just going to keep moving here, everybody. And as far as that, keeping on moving, Terry, where do you want to go next? I was excited to talk about the dashboard. I didn't know where we were going to go after that.
Yeah, no, it is very exciting. I do want to remind everyone, any information that we're talking about today, you can find at uwswac.org, and that is our website. But that's where you can find that dashboard that James and I were talking about before the break. So a couple of other things that we have coming up soon. You know, one is tax time is right around tax day is right around the corner. But the reason I bring that up is not to squash people, yeah, not being the dark cloud. Yeah. But we do offer free tax preparation through our website. It's a partnership between United Way Worldwide and My Free Taxes. And so if your household income was less than $72,000 last year, you can file for free. And if it was more than that, you can also file there. It's just there is some small incremental cost. So we do encourage people to take a look at that. It is a great way to save yourself $100, $150, whatever the going price is. And it's very user-friendly. I think, James, you said you've used it before. My daughter has used it before. So it's user-friendly. Mm-hmm. You can do it from a mobile phone, which is sometimes a little bit unique, because sometimes they're set up that they'll only work on a computer PC, like a bigger resolution. So just we encourage people to, keep in mind tax day is around the corner, and that service will be up and available on our website through, I believe it's April 17th this year. Yeah, that's a Monday. Through April 17th. We also have our calendar raffle.
Yeah.
And so we've been selling these tickets for a little while, but this is kind of last call, right? Mm. So we have this week and next week, and that's it, because we start doing these drawings on Monday, April 3rd. So every business day in the month of April, we will be drawing for cash prizes. And these are all sponsored by local businesses. So any money that you would spend buying a calendar would go right toward, again, community programming. So we do encourage people to do that. Like I said, we have this week and next week left. We're giving away $2,000 in prizes to get your name in the pot. It is $10 per ticket, or you get 3 for $20. When you're drawn, your name goes back in, so you potentially could be drawn again with same ticket.
I really feel like that's a bad business idea. It's really cool that you do it, but it is exciting. It is very exciting.
And we actually had it happen once. So we've done this 4 years. And one time we actually had the exact, we've had it like 3 or 4 times where the same person would get drawn, but one time it was the exact same ticket, because we'll track the name and the ticket number. So it is kind of fun. But those tickets can be purchased at the United Way office, which is located at 351 Oak Street here in Wisconsin Rapids. If you are interested in tickets, but you can't get to us, give us a call and we'll figure something out. But again, we can sell those up through next week, Friday, March 31st, and then the drawings will begin. So encourage people to jump on board with that.
It's a great way to put back in your community, invest in your community. It's also a fun way to do it.
It is really fun. And our goal is to leverage $5,000 with us in selling these tickets. And again, remember, the $2,000 in prizes are already paid for.
Right.
So that's our goal. And we still need like $700. Mm. So we're at like $4,300. So if you're interested, if you've got $10 or $20 that you'd like to contribute, get in touch with us. We would love to have you have a chance to win and be part of that.
I think a lot of people are looking to donate that kind of, $10, $20, that kind of thing. But doing it in a really fun way, it really brings them in. So we encourage you to check that out.
Yeah, it is super fun. And we will do the drawings every day at 11 a.m. And then they will be posted on our website. And, of course, we will also call the winners and send them a check, of course.
You guys are masters at finding fun, creative ways to put back into your community. I think one of your signature events is United We Can at that. I think it combines all those things.
Absolutely. So to that point, United We Can is coming up. And I realize June doesn't sound like it's coming up, but June is not that far away. So, 3 months away. So we have United We Can on Thursday, June 15th. And this is our food sculpture contest that we have been doing for several years.
Yeah.
I believe 2009 was the first year, but it might have been 2010.
Hmm.
I'd have to look for certain. Yeah. But this has been going, 2013. Well, okay, since we started collecting in this, recording it in this way, but since 2013, we've collected 64,532 pounds of food, which is amazing, right? And those are all used in sculptures. So bring you to the reason we're talking about this now is that we are currently registering teams. So if you, your family, your workplace, your church, your youth group, your civic group, the group of people you go out to eat with, whoever, whatever group you want to assemble, you can build a food sculpture.
Yeah.
We just, you know, and we seek out creativity, of course, and are looking for local organizations, businesses, individuals to be part of this. So registration is open and you can register on our website. The building takes place on the 15th from 10 to 4. So you have to be able to do that. You have to be all done by 4 o'clock. And we encourage you to practice, maybe pre-build once. You don't have to, but it's just encouraged. But anybody who, any team that is registered by May 12th goes into a drawing to win Point Craft River tickets.
Yeah.
So not only do you get tickets, all the teams get 4 tickets to the game. So you can, you know, be there for the excitement. But if you are the team that is drawn, then you get to sit in the Point Craft River, which is just fun. It's a little bit different perspective at the ballpark. And so we have two different categories, Major League and Minor League. If you are in the Minor League, you use 499 cans or less. Of food or items, I should say, not all cans. Sometimes it's boxed items. And if you are in the Major League, then it's 500 items or more. So that gives, you know, smaller organizations or groups that have a smaller budget, it gives them an opportunity to still participate. And then we have some awards.
Ooh.
And so these awards are given each year. I'm going to just call it the 2022 winners from last year. But we do a most creative, and that went to West Rock down in Adams Friendship. And they built a ship, I believe.
Oh, yeah.
Right?
Yeah, they did. Yeah, they did. Yeah.
Most nutritious was Solaris.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know if I recall what that sculpture was. I'll have to ask Ben. And then we had Community Choice Award. And this is for folks who come to the Rafter game and they get to vote. So that's another fun reason to come to the game that night is you get to vote on your favorite sculpture. And so for the Minor League, again, under 500 cans, that went to Grace Lutheran Church. And then for the Major League, over 500 cans was Paper City Savings. So it's just great fun.
Yeah. It's something that I've been fortunate and humbled to be able to be a judge on for the last couple of years, and I've really enjoyed. I also the part of it I don't enjoy is trying to decide who wins these things. I'm not joking. I'm terrible
it's
at
hard.
Deciding. It's really hard. Every year it gets harder and harder. I'm glad that we're talking about this a couple of months in beforehand so that people can not only get their team together, but maybe practice and figure out what they want to build. I can't speak to this, but it seems like people really like go all out for this and really want to do something big and something fun and creative, whether you have a lot of people or not, a lot of cans you're using or not. And every year, I love the creativity. I get blown away by it. I get blown away by this community coming together because it's not just the businesses that create teams, but you guys also host a open can drive during the Rafters game and being able to do this. The Rafters hosting this event and being able to have this in always a beautiful summer day, it seems like, and having all of this come together. And then I look at these things, and it happens every year. I've been doing this about 4 or 5 years with you guys, and every year I'm looking around and I'm all focused on the creativity and deciding who's going to win. And then it hits me, this is going to help people. Every food, everything that I'm looking at here, break this down. A person eats 3 meals a day, let's say. Okay, so I'm looking at these items and I see somebody who made a boat. In that boat is about 50 to 60 meals. And I'm lowballing. I'm not even eyeball. I'm lowballing this. That's 50 or 60 different meals for those people. That's just that one little item. Like, I don't know how you can't be humbled by this event, how you can't be blown away by it and get just want to be a part of it. So whether you want to create a team, or you want to maybe bring an item to the game when the Rafters take on, I believe, Kalamazoo.
Kalamazoo.
Kalamazoo Growlers. That's always a good one. That's always a good game. So that, I mean, you know, come down to the ballpark, experience this event for yourself, be a part of it, and please, if you can't create a team, bring a non-perishable food item to the ballpark that day and help us, you know, make this community stronger.
Absolutely. And we typically have between 10 and 12 sculptures. So, you know, it's fun to just walk around and look at them.
It really is.
And it is funny, too. I think that we've shared this little tip with you before being a judge. But it's funny because sometimes you'll look at them just with your naked eye, right? And you're kind of like, not really sure what it is. I mean, mm-hmm. I get the gist of what it is, but I'm not certain what they were trying to accomplish. And then if you look through your phone camera, it looks like all of a sudden it's like, oh, I totally know what that is. You know,
it's so weird.
It is awesome. Very weird, but it's really cool. And so, you know, we just encourage people to get involved. We're hoping again for, you know, that 8, 10, 12 sculptures. Again, typically we leverage somewhere between 8 and 10,000 pounds of food for each event. And so This is major, and it's important in our community. And, you know, the food is then distributed the next morning to members of our Hunger Coalition who are, you know, who handle food, right?
Yeah,
so
yeah.
So when we talk about that, we think about the backpacks program in Nakusa, the focus. So it could be used for neighborhood meals. It could be used for the food pantry. It could be used for the backpack program. The Family Center has a pantry for those who might be in shelter. But also, if you've been a shelter client, you can come back for a period of time. And so, you know, there's a lot of great places that this food is going. And it's exactly what you said. It's a spirit of community. It's fun, and it's a great. I mean, there's no better venue, right?
Yeah.
Like, where else could something so awesome happen? So, certainly looking forward to that, and encouraging teams to get signed up.
Yes, and you could sponsor a team and take in a great game. And while you're doing that and practicing, you can all think about spring. You can think about summer. You get to do that. That's an added bonus to all of this. I encourage you to be a part of this great event, everybody. Do you want to touch on Community Shred Day?
Yep, that's the last thing that I have is, right. So Community Shred Day is coming up on April 12th. And this is hosted by Prevail Bank. And they are at 1601 Lincoln Street. So we encourage you to gather up your items, your sensitive items that need to be shredded. You can bring those. Shredding will start at 9 a.m. and it will go, we're scheduled 9 till 11, but I do just put the warning out there. Once the shred truck is full, it's full.
Mm-hmm.
So there have been times where we've been able to go all the way till 11, but there also have been times where by 10:30 we have to shut down. It just depends how much paper shows up. So I encourage you to gather up those sensitive items. So when you're thinking about that, old bank statements, any old credit card statements, anything that has sensitive information on it that you really don't need to be hanging on to anymore, bring those down to be shredded. You can bring two, I believe the dimensions, you might show the dimensions over there of the box.
It's 18 by 10.
Yeah. So, you know, just like a box that you can easily manage in your arms, right?
Yeah.
So you can bring two of those for free. And each additional box is just a small donation of $5. So that's, you know, really, really small. But we do encourage you to do that and bring those items and get them out of your home so that identity theft isn't taking place. So we really thank our friends at Prevail Bank. And the way that United Way is involved in this is, of course, through our Financial Stability Coalition, because this is important that folks are not experiencing identity theft. But then also, United Way receives $1 for each pound of shredded paper. And so this is hosted by Prevail Bank and is at their Wisconsin Rapids location. But then we have a second sponsor, and that is Bank Account Corp. Mm-hmm. So United Way for this event will receive $2,000, provided we can hustle up 2,000 pounds of paper.
Yes.
And really, that's quite easy to do. We're typically well over that. But again, once the shred truck is full, it's full. It's April 12th. It's a Wednesday, and we start at 9 a.m.
Hmm.
And you just pull into the parking lot. If you want to get out, you can, but you don't even have to. We have enough volunteers there that they will just come to your car, scoop up your boxes, and take them into Jerry in the shred truck, and he will send them through. So really great community event and really important because we all have stuff like that sitting around.
Yeah, our information has never been more important to us and vital to us and everything. So an event like this is very helpful for people to have that peace of mind when they're getting rid of these. Well, we've been doing this about 4 or 5 years together, and I remember this event now. And I, out of all the events you guys did, this was the one that stood out to me as kind of like, well, huh, I didn't see a need for this as much. And then I thought that day I'd drive past and see, and I saw a line of cars. Yeah. And I think the next day, because that was back when you were like co-hosting the morning show like every day with me, you poor thing. And the next day, looking at you like, I was wrong about this. Like the amount of like people that show up for this event and how important it is. And this was pre-pandemic. So even now, it's even more important to a lot of people out there. It's a great event. And again, it is coming up April 12th. Make sure to mark your calendars, 9 to 11 over at Prevail Bank parking lot. One more time, do want to remind everybody about the calendar raffle as well. That's a limited time. That's got a shelf life.
Absolutely. Come get your tickets. So we are selling through next Friday, March 31st, $10 each or 3 for $20. And you can win over the course of the month of April. We have $2,000 in cash prizes.
Encourage you as well to check out the 211 dashboard. 211 Wisconsin is where you can find that. And go to the United Way's website, uwswac.org. And it'll have a link that'll take you right to it. Be sure to follow the United Way on social media as well. It's a great follow. And be listening this Friday to the morning show. Terry's going to be sitting in with us co-hosting. It is this Friday, right?
It is this Friday.